Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Leslie Dach, and I'm the founder and chair of Protect Our Care, and thank you for joining us for this important conversation. Before I turn the call over to our speakers, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and California Attorney General Javier Becerra and my colleague Brad Woodhouse, I just wanted to give 1 minute of introduction. We founded Protect Our Care in 2017, and working to support the speaker and other elected officials, and along with millions of grassroots advocates across the country, we defeated the Trump administration's effort to repeal the ACA in Congress. And then in 2018, working with tens of millions of voters across the country, we defeated ACA repeal at the ballot box. Unable to defeat the ACA in Congress or in an election, President Trump and a group of Republican attorney generals then turned to the courts and won victory at the trial court and appeals court levels, despite the near unanimous view among legal scholars, including many who had earlier argued against the legality of the ACA, that their case was wholly without legal merit. Today, the Supreme Court begins its consideration of that effort by President Trump and Republican attorney generals to completely overturn the Affordable Care Act. And today, the House of Representatives and a group of 21 state and attorney generals, including the District of Columbia, led by Attorney General Becerra, submit their briefs to the Supreme Court opposing that lawsuit. Oral arguments expected in the fall, possibly before the November election. Simply put, there has never been a worse time to rip apart America's health care. No issue is more important to Americans today in the middle of the coronavirus crisis than their health care. And yet, if this partisan and ideological effort is successful at repealing the ACA, 20 million Americans will lose their health insurance, on top of the millions who have already lost their employer-based insurance because of this crisis. Everyone who has had the coronavirus will have a pre-existing condition and could then be at the mercy of their insurance companies, who could refuse to pay for needed care. Medicaid expansion would be eliminated. And these are just the beginning of the list of horrific outcomes. It's critical that Americans understand just what's at stake if this outrageous and irresponsible lawsuit succeeds. And that's what today's call is all about. Now I'd like to turn this call over to Brad Woodhouse, who's the executive director of Protect Our Care, and my colleague to introduce our speakers. Brad?
Great. Thank you, Leslie, and thank you for your leadership. You founded this organization, you've led it, and it has been vitally important, and I'm so glad to be your partner in this work. So I'm basically going to MC this call, but I will take a couple of points of personal privilege to talk about our distinguished speakers today. As it relates to Speaker Pelosi, she probably won't remember me from this era, but we began working together before she was speaker, when another Republican president was trying to rip apart part of the social safety net in this country, when President Bush was trying to privatize and dismantle Social Security. She led an effort in the House, and we defeated that. And I believe that was actually the tip of the spear in taking back the House in historic fashion in 2006 and installing Nancy Pelosi as Speaker the first time. But here today, we're really talking about the Affordable Care Act. And I think there are few people who will forget the leadership that Nancy Pelosi displayed in getting the Affordable Care Act through. There is a book out, or soon to be out, by Molly Ball, aptly titled Pelosi, like you needed to say anything else, that chronicles how Speaker Pelosi got the Affordable Care Act through. How the excerpt that I've seen is really about how she was able to overcome some difficult politics to get it through the first time in 2009. And then, of course, to get it over the finish line in 2010, where she was the one that put her foot down when other people were saying, well, this is just too hard. We just can't do this. There's too much controversy. And by God, she got it done. Now, Molly Ball is entitled her book Pelosi. In our world, we just refer to Speaker ACA. And with that, let me turn it over to Speaker ACA, Nancy Pelosi.
Thank you very much, Brad. I remember well the fight we had over Social Security, and I do believe that the difference that you helped make, that is to say, the public awareness of what was at stake. I always say inside maneuvering, we can do just so much. Outside mobilization makes all the difference. And thank you and others who work so hard to mobilize against that undermining of Social Security. And I do agree it was the path to the majority. But that was then, and this is now, and I accept all your kind words about that and the ACA on behalf of my colleagues. It was their courage, their determination, their intellectual experience and the rest that made it a good bill. We wanted in the House, of course, we wanted a public option, but in any event, we got the makings of where we go from here. And so to you and to, let me say to Leslie, Leslie, thank you. We're all in your debt. Thank you for establishing Protect Our Care. Thank you as chair of presiding over it and what you have made possible. Brad is wonderful, and I've worked with him on a day-to-day basis, and I want to sing his praises as well. Let me just say, it won't just be the 20 million people and then those who will lose their insurance because of losing their job. It's the benefits of, 150 million families that were drastically improved in the bill that will be lost. You know, when we did the bill, it was about the health of the American people, the financial help of the American people. We had to do the bill. The costs were unsustainable to individuals, to families, to small businesses, corporate America, to the public sector, unsustainable. So it was about physical health and fiscal health. But it was also about a healthy America, about prevention and all those kinds of things that make people healthy. And people gained confidence from it. You all know, you hear it all over, how people say, this made a difference in my family, this, that, or the other, or just is it protection that I know I have. So this is what's at stake, are the provisions of the bill, but also the hope and confidence that instilled in the American people and the healthier America, which was our overriding goal. And here we are, honored to be with Attorney General of California, Javier Becerra, a person who was present and instrumental and a leader in getting the ACA passed. He knows the challenge that was there and how much we have to protect in this. And I thank him. We're so proud of him, as you can imagine. But I'm also proud of not only his work on this subject, but his leadership in drawing others together. I know he'll speak about that. And as Brad, as Leslie said, 21 states, including the District of Columbia. So that was really, that's very, very important. So Javier, I don't think we could be in better hands than somebody who was present at the birth of the Affordable Care Act, now protecting it from this assault. And here we are, a time of extraordinary heartbreak. 70,000, went over 70,000 today, tragically dead, over a million affected by it, and over 30 million losing their jobs. This is about the lives and the livelihood of the American people. And as lives and livelihoods are being shattered by the coronavirus, the protections of the Affordable Care Act are more important than ever. Every day, we see how access to affordable health care is a matter of life and death. Yet, in an act of staggering cruelty and senselessness, the president is still in court suing to tear down the ACA and dismantle every one of its protections and benefits. So you know what some of those are. During the Q&A, I can go more into it. But what I think is most, well, with stiff competition, the most shocking of all is the pre-existing condition benefit, that even when the bill, the case was a question of severability or not, now it isn't, but when it was, they were zeroing in, this administration, on the pre-existing condition benefit to get rid of that. What more do you need to know about? So on day one in Congress, in this Congress, the House voted to throw our full weight into this fight, into defeating this lawsuit. And on March 23rd, the 10th anniversary of the Affordable Care Act, I called on the president to abandon his lawsuit and to destroy that would destroy the ACA. Today, as we grieve and pray for the millions suffering during this crisis, I renew that call and urge him to call on the 14 states who have refused to expand Medicaid to do so. Should be doing that too. We also want to have in this, our legislation coming up, we don't know why we shouldn't be having a new enrollment period, a special enrollment period, SEP, a special enrollment period, so that people who want to sign up can sign up for the good of themselves, for the good of our country, really. How can this president watch as families are being devastated by this virus, losing their loved ones, and then say, I'm going to take away their health care? The administration has a responsibility to defend the law of the land. The Affordable Care Act is the law of the land. They're not supposed to tear it down. Just as Democrats and patient groups mobilized to defeat the monstrosity of Trump care, holding, and Brad, thank you for this, 10,000 events around the country so that people could tell their stories. We have all the statistics, we have all the policy, but nothing is more eloquent than the stories, the heart-to-heart of what this means to families. We, again, will be coming together to protect our care as we are now, but in every possible way will continue to shine a light on this president's deadly denial of science, disdain for the truth, and disregard for America's families' lives. And again, it's not just about health care or financial, paying the bills. It's about the good health of America so that when something comes along, we're not all susceptible. But by prevention and the rest, we're in better shape, healthier as a nation. With that, again, I'm so honored to be with our Attorney General, Javier Becerra. Gratitude to Leslie for establishing Protect Our Care. We really depend on you. And Brad, as always, thank you for the mobilization, which means makes a difference. In this case, outside mobilization is a mat that makes a difference between life and death. I yield back. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Speaker Pelosi, and thank you for your leadership. You are such an inspiration to us, and you have been an inspiration and such an ally personally to me. With that, I'd like to introduce Attorney General Becerra. Before I do, I just want to amplify what the speaker said. I mean, this is an individual who is committed to these issues, is committed as Attorney General of California, has organized this opposition to this lawsuit, has designed the strategy for how to argue this at every level along the way. But he comes by this so much honestly and from experience. I mean, this is someone, an Attorney General Becerra, who was there to fight for passage of the Affordable Care Act. But beyond just the Affordable Care Act, I mean, no one will forget how Attorney General Becerra in the House fought the likes of Paul Ryan and those group of people and Boehner before him who were gunning for Medicare, for Medicaid, and for Social Security. I mean, we have as a group, Madam Speaker and Attorney General Becerra, we have continually fought these actions against Republicans who want to tear down the social safety net. We had to defeat the privatization of Social Security. We had to defeat, as Attorney General Becerra helped lead in the House, the voucherization of Medicare. And now we have to defeat the repeal through the courts of the Affordable Care Act. And thank God for your leadership. And with that, let me turn it over to Attorney General Javier Becerra.
Brad, to you, Leslie, to you as well, and to all your team at Protect Our Care, can I just say we owe you so much. Thank you, and continue to move forward. And to all the folks who are joining us, I know we wish we could have done this in person, but hey, the fight goes on, and we'll all be there as a team. So I'm proud to be here joining with you. And wow, what a pleasure it is to be with Speaker Pelosi, the number one champion for the ACA. I know because I was there in 2009 and 2010 when we got it done. I know personally who did the heavy lifting. The truth is we could have, maybe we should have called the ACA Pelosi Care, because quite honestly, but for Nancy Pelosi, we might not have reached this level. And now we have to fight for it. And fortunately, we still have Speaker Pelosi fighting to defend the Affordable Care Act. So I'm thrilled to be here. Once again, it's a bit of deja vu. Today, we filed our brief. And when I say today, we, I mean, we, a coalition, as the speaker mentioned, 20 states and the District of Columbia. We filed our legal brief before the Supreme Court. We are defending the Affordable Care Act because the Trump administration chose to walk away from its legal obligation to defend our federal laws and the Affordable Care Act. And so we're in court today. And in defending the Affordable Care Act before the Supreme Court, our goal is pretty simple. Save affordable health care, and with it, American lives. And today, as we see more than 70,000 Americans who have perished as a result of the coronavirus, we understand what it means to have access to affordable, quality health care. This Trump administration chose to walk away from its obligation to defend the Affordable Care Act. It's not a moment too soon for us to stand up then, because this is not a moment to abandon Americans who need to know they have the health coverage they need to protect their families from the coronavirus, or from pre-existing conditions, or from surprise medical bills, or from junk health insurance. Our coalition is in the right place at the right time to protect Americans' health care, and we're going to stay there before the Supreme Court and see that this gets done. We have been fighting in court now for some 2 years to save the Affordable Care Act. It was back in May of 2018 that the district court in the Fifth Circuit gave us the opportunity, the green light, to intervene in this case because we had a suspicion that the Trump administration would not defend the Affordable Care Act the way it needed to be against this attack by Texas and several other conservative states. And so we stepped in. President Trump has discussed the pandemic recently and said we shouldn't lose one person over this pandemic. I think we all agree. But Mr. President, we've lost more than 70,000 so far, and your own projections say we could see that number rise well beyond 100,000. The plain truth is Americans can't get the care they need if it's not affordable or accessible. And they can't get that care if the Trump administration tries to repeal the Affordable Care Act in the Supreme Court. What would we lose? Protections for over 133 million Americans, pre-existing conditions. The uninsurance rate would likely dramatically increase if we lost the Affordable Care Act. Medicaid expansion, which has covered some 17 million Americans, gone. Nearly 12 million seniors who would have to pay more for prescription drug coverage if we lost the Affordable Care Act. Gone as well, the 2.3 million adult children who depend on their parents' health insurance to get their coverage. The assistance that we provided to some 9 million people to help purchase their health care insurance on the marketplaces, gone. And of course, the support that we give to our rural hospitals, we would lose that as well if the ACA were to disappear. Time for us to stand up for the rights that we have. It's time to be champions, as Speaker Pelosi was back in 2009 and 2010 and continue to be today. It's time to protect our care the way Brad, you, and Leslie, and your team are doing it. It's time for us to recognize that we cannot go back. We should not turn back the clock. And the best days can be ahead of us. But we can lick things like the COVID-19 virus and the effects it's had on our economy if we're smart. It would not be smart to eliminate the Affordable Care Act. So today we filed our brief in court before the Supreme Court to make it clear we're not going to walk away from this fight, and we intend to win. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Attorney General Becerra. With that, Whitney, let's queue up as many questions as we can take.
Absolutely. At this time, if there are questions for our speakers, please press star 3 on your phone to enter our Q&A queue. Again, that's star 3 if you have a question for any of our speakers. All All right, our first question is going to come from Mike D. at the Washington Post. Mike,
Hi.
You are live.
Thank you. Madam Speaker, just two quick questions regarding the CARES 2 bill that you are now putting together. Number one, do you anticipate mandating in that a special ACA enrollment period for Americans who've lost their jobs or otherwise been affected by coronavirus? And number two, you've said repeatedly testing, testing, testing. What testing-related provisions do you anticipate being in CARES 2? There's the TRACE Act out there now with $100 billion. Is that something you're looking at? There's some members who are talking about seizing control of the national supply chains. What are the testing-related ideas you anticipate in the bill? Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for your question. I'll start with your second one first, because without going into detail about the bill, because I have some more calls with my colleagues as we curate and prioritize some of our provisions for the bill and see what the costs are. I won't be unfolding the bill on this call right now. But I will say this. There are three pillars in it. It's about the lives, the livelihood, and the life of our democracy. In terms of the lives, we think testing, testing, testing is essential. This is our first bill, bipartisan, May 4th. It was written in February, passed on the floor May 4th, was about testing, testing, testing. And it just didn't happen. Most recent bill, $25 billion that we had to fight for testing. And now we're seeing how that will be implemented. But we need much more. What that figure is, we're working on, but it is about testing and tracing. It's TTTI, testing, tracing, treatment, and isolation. Of course, to begin with the prevention with the social distancing, but TTTI. And this has to be big. Most scientists and authorities on the subject say we have to be testing three times more than we are today in terms of reaching all communities. But you know, we were talking about ACA in the court, so I won't go further into it except to say that we will need a substantial figure for the testing as well as for the tracing, because you cannot, if you test without tracing, it's like clapping with one hand. It just doesn't produce the desired effect, which is to find out who has this so we can treat them, so that we can save their lives, and you don't see this disparity from one community to the next in our country. But to do that, we need to have the materials to do it, and I hope that the president would do the Defense Production Act so that we could have what we need to do this testing. Again, I don't want to go further down the path of what the governors are not getting from the administration on testing, but to say that we need to have a supply chain, not only for testing, but God willing, if there is a cure or a vaccine, and we hope that will be soon, probably the cure sooner, hopefully, then we would have to have the ingredients to make it. We're not ready. And neither have we made things that are predictable, like you don't need to know what's in a vaccine to know that you need syringes and you need vials and all that kind of thing in order to minister that to people. So we have to have, again, the supply chain, and that's important. We have a provision in the bill, Congresswoman Eshoo's bill, actually, to do that. Now, what I want to just finalize on that, and it applies to what we're talking about here today, it's about ethics, and we can't test everybody because we don't have enough tests. Oh, therefore, who gets left behind? We don't have enough ingredients to make enough vaccine or cure, so who gets left behind? So you have to have enough so that it is ethically and fairly distributed in our country, and not a market opportunity for the private sector, but a moral imperative as a public health issue. We'll see about putting this, we have it, we put it in everything, the special enrollment period, and most likely that will be in the bill, but I'm not making any announcements about it right now. Thank you.
Madam Speaker, right. This is Leslie Dock. Just to add to that, I just want to thank you for your leadership in being the voice of health and healthcare in these bills, and all that you said about tracing and isolation and testing is so important, and all the work that you're doing to be sure that we take full advantage of the Affordable Care Act opportunities to provide people with health care and affordable health care. So thank you for your ongoing leadership on these issues.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you. Whitney, additional questions?
Yep. Our next question is going to come from Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar at the Associated Press. Ricardo, you are live.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. And it's for Speaker Pelosi. And without asking about a specific piece of legislation, I'm just wondering, we have estimated 25 million to 43 million people who will lose employer health insurance. Are you starting to hear within your caucus about steps to try and move health insurance away from the employer link? And if so, can you tell us what you're hearing from members of your caucus and what your own general thinking is on that at this stage?
No, I'm not getting that from my caucus. We have differences in our opinion as how we arrive at health care for all Americans, which is our common goal. We have hearings on every subject from single-payer Medicare for all to how we improve the Affordable Care Act. And whatever it is, we see the Affordable Care Act as the path to health care for all Americans, whatever form it may end up being. And 150 million families have employer birth insurance. And I think that rather than saying, let's take that away from them, that we should say, let's get them their jobs back. And one way to do that that is interesting in our caucus at this time for consideration in this bill, but again, not making a pronouncement here, is that if instead of we don't want so many people on unemployment insurance, we want rather have them getting their paycheck, that perhaps a guaranteed paycheck initiative is worthy of attention. It keeps people in their jobs, retains their health insurance, and that is what I'm hearing from my members, not how we can get rid of the Affordable Care Act, but how we can keep people in their jobs. And the again, it is, again, under discussion. It would probably cost maybe a little bit more than what Secretary Mnuchin has in his Secretary of the Treasury fund, $500 billion, to dispense as he sees fit. This would cost maybe that or $600 billion, something like that. We're getting the figures. But it also eliminates a lot of cost in terms of unemployment insurance and some other initiatives that are warranted, because we have to put money in people's pockets. And so it's about our testing with a strategy, robust, rapid testing with a strategy. It's about honoring our first responders, and we can't honor them and we can't thank them if we don't support them with the PPE they need, as well as with them. They risk their lives to save other lives, and they may lose their jobs, and that's why we have a strong state and local for the reasons of health, and in that regard, they're our heroes. And then the third, putting money in people's pockets. So it all relates to their mental state, their physical as well as financial well-being. And again, no, that's not our conversation right now. Right now, there's great sadness. 70,000 people have died in our country, and sadly, hopefully not, but sadly, predictably, more to come. Over a million plus affected by it, and 30 million people applying for, well, the number applying for social unemployment, but 25 to 30 million either applying for unemployment insurance or out of work. So we have important work to do, but the path to it is science and health, to open the economy, science and health, not death. Death is not an economic stimulus. I said that this morning at a meeting. Health is. And so we are very proud of the Affordable Care Act because we've reached so many people over the past 10 years, including now, who might even be more susceptible to this had they had not improved their own physical well-being and resistance to such a thing. So the answer is no, I haven't. Thank you.
Great. Whitney?
Yep, our next question is going to come from Tammy Luby at CNN. Tammy, you are live.
Thank you very much for holding this call, all. I was just wondering about whether there's any appetite that you're hearing about COBRA, additional Medicaid payments to states, and somewhat related, increasing SNAP, which you and Leader Schumer had hoped to do in the last bill, but that got cut out.
Thank you. I hope we can get back to the case at hand, because right now so much is at risk in the third branch of government, which is appointed by the second branch of government. We're the first. The first branch of government, the legislative branch, passes the laws. The executive branch, the second branch of government, executes the law, doesn't go to the third branch of government to overturn the law. And we should be spending all this time on something as foolish as this, what the case on their part that isn't even well-founded or grounded, is really a sad testimony to a lack of value of the health and well-being of the American people that is there. In terms of SNAP, how can they turn down SNAP? But they have twice, not just once, more than once. We had it in first bill, and we wanted in the CARES 1 and then the interim bill. Now we are striving to get even more in this bill. COBRA is a big-ticket item. It's like $100 billion for 15 months. Not 1 year, but 15 months. Again, if we could be doing something like the guaranteed paycheck, some of that is people can stay in their jobs and therefore keep their health insurance. But if they can't, the COBRA is almost prohibitive for many people, especially as it comes into being when they lose their job. So many of these things, whether it's about Medicaid and FMAP, we think that is really, really important to have in there, too. We had it in the first bill. We couldn't get it in the subsequent bills, but we'll get it now. It's hard to understand why, seeing the suffering and the needs of the American people, that some people here they're more into greed than need in some cases, and we think need should trump greed all the time. So in any case, thank you for that question. I'm going to yield to Mr. Becerra because he knows the lay of the land very well. He has to be on the ground in California to see all those unemployment insurance requests and the costs, as well as what Medicaid expansion has done there. Mr. Attorney General?
Madam Speaker, I appreciate your yielding time. I think people have seen that Governor Newsom and the state of California, working with our local government partners, have been working hard to make sure that we're ahead of the curve. And in this particular case, we started early when it came to providing services, to asking folks to stay home, and certainly when it came to making sure people had the benefits that they needed. And so Governor Newsom and his team have worked really hard to make sure that we have thought through all the things that are necessary. And I know he's been in touch with your offices and also the administration, trying to telegraph for the federal government what the needs are in the largest state in the nation. But again, I think the good news for those of us in California is that our elected leaders, not just in D.C., certainly important, but also back here in the state with the governor on down, have been working hard to make sure that we stay ahead of whatever the coronavirus might bring.
Great. Thank you, Attorney General. Whitney, another question?
Yep. Our next question is going to come from Scott Schaefer at KQED. Scott, you are live.
Hi, thank you very much. Farm workers, as you know, many of whom are undocumented, are considered essential workers here in California and elsewhere, keeping fresh food in the markets, and they are not eligible for the ACA under federal law. But as I think you know, California is extending health and other benefits to undocumented immigrants, but the state is being sued over that. And I'm wondering if either the Speaker or Attorney General Becerra, can you comment on the legal and political justification for the payments and whatever response you may have to the claims that these payments are unconstitutional?
Javier, you want to go first on that? You've been such a leader. Thank you.
Sure. Scott, thanks for the question. It's an important question because, as many people have now become aware, most of these undocumented workers have actually been classified as essential workers. And so it's kind of tragic, I'd say ironic if it weren't tragic, that so many of our essential workers are people who are not getting services and benefits simply because of their status, yet they're the folks that are keeping food coming to our tables, caring for a lot of our elderly, our children, and keeping the construction going and keeping our economy trying to move, the food workers, the transportation workers. So it's a sad part about our public policy. And I remember working with the Speaker to try to change the policy that has deprived so many individuals who have built this country, like my parents, who were immigrants, and yet can never fully be appreciated for what they do. But in terms of this particular case, the state of California, again, has stepped forward. We are providing services. We are making sure that everything we do, including providing certain services to those who are undocumented, are done according to the law, whether it's federal law or state law. And we are confident that not only will we bridge the gap for a lot of our families who are working really hard, are the essential workers and have family and children to take care of, but that we do it in a way that respects all the laws that the federal government has put forward. And we are fortunate that we have foresighted leadership in the state of California that recognizes that human beings need to be cared for and thought about, especially those who work hard to make sure that the rest of us are safe and sound. So I guess that's a kind of oblique way of saying we're confident that whatever we do in the state of California is legal.
Thank you, Attorney General. Whitney, let's take, I know some of us are pressed for time, so let's take one more question.
Great. Our last question is going to come from Julie Rovner at Kaiser Health News.
Hi.
Julie, you are live.
Hi. Thank you so much for doing this. I have a very quick question. Attorney General Becerra, we had heard that the federal government might be changing its position in the Affordable Care Act case. I know there's a deadline today. Have you heard anything suggesting they will or won't be adopting a new position in this case?
I adopted a position early on watching this administration that we act based on what they do, not what they say. We've heard the same words about AG Barr trying to convince the administration to change its course in the Affordable Care Act, but we've seen nothing, and we're going to proceed understanding that one way or the other, there will be Americans defending the Affordable Care Act before the Supreme Court.
Thank you.
Hey, Julie, this is Brad Woodhouse. This is our last question, but Attorney General is being diplomatic, obviously, as he should be. But if Attorney General Barr's position is to go back to the position that that the Trump administration took when they first weighed in on this lawsuit, remember that position was that if nothing else goes away, protections for people with pre-existing conditions and all of the other essential health benefits, those that curb insurance company abuses and that give rights to people and that make healthcare more equitable for, you know, for women, don't treat being a woman as a pre-existing condition. That was their position, and that was the position they went into the 2018 midterms with, and that was the position that that helped put Nancy Pelosi back in the speakership. So, purportedly Attorney General Barr is concerned about the politics. Well, we already know that the politics of their prior position. They're really no better than, I think, the politics of the position that he may want to revert, that he may want to revert back to. But it also has not been a lot of detail on what he actually wants to do. But with that, let me ask the Attorney General first and then the Speaker if they have any closing comments.
First, again, to protect our care, thank you for everything you're doing. You're protecting our care, and we count on that. I want to just say to everyone who voted for Nancy Pelosi to be our speaker a couple years ago, thank you for doing the right thing, being smart. I know that that's enough to encourage the speaker to go out there and give it her all, and no one gets in her way when she does. And I will finally say, we will survive these times. My dad would always tell me, if I can get up in the morning, go to work, it was a good day. There are a whole bunch of people in America who have been forgotten or in the shadows, who get up every morning and go to work. And even though they're not considered when it comes to support and protection, they're having a good day. And there are a whole bunch of Americans who want to go back to work, who want to continue to protect their families. They want to see more good days. And so I'm a firm believer that in this country, we're going to have a lot of good days. We just need to get the right leadership and people who understand that in order for us to do that, we have to take care of each other. And fortunately, we have leaders that are willing to do that and protect our care, and Speaker Pelosi. And in California, I think we can say we have a good share of those as well. So I want to thank Protect Our Care for letting me be part of this call. And we will give every effort in the fight to defend the Affordable Care Act, not just for California, but for every American in this country. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Attorney General. Madam Speaker, any closing comments?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to say a couple of things at the end. First, let me just say that in the Congress of the United States, Javier Becerra was there at the birth of the Affordable Care Act, as I said earlier. But he was also present and in the lead on many of the issues that relate to comprehensive immigration reform. Some just specific, like the Dream Act that we passed. Oh, geez, it's like 18 years ago, a long time ago. I don't know how many years ago, but it was introduced 18 years ago. We passed it when we had the majority, and Javier was very much in the lead on that. So when Scott asked the question about California and some people who are not, shall we say, fully or up to date on their documentation, we're talking to the person who knows all about that challenge as well as and try to correct it as well as the implications for the health of those people. But it's not just about their health. It's in everyone's interest that everyone be in the healthcare loop. As the question was earlier, did I hear anything about this or that? Not any more than usual, but nonetheless, right now, absolutely essential that we're able to get benefits to everyone in our country when we're testing, when we're tracing, when we're treating, and the rest, because, again, it's in everyone's interest. In terms of California, you would think the United Farm Workers are picking the fruit or the food and the produce and the rest, and they have conditions that they're working under that don't measure up. And so there are many things that that we want to try to do in this bill to help more people to be able to take advantage of what is there health-wise, but also to participate in some of the benefits, financial benefits that are there. Again, I would just say PC, pre-existing conditions. If anybody needed to know anything about where this administration stands, just think of all of our little lobbyists, all these children born with a pre-existing condition, and again, they would have lifetime limits and annual limits on the care that they could get, the insurance coverage that they could get. So this is as I said, my first sentence, I think, was an act of cruelty on the part of the administration, a major disruption in the health and well-being of the American people. It's a bad idea at any time. Right now, it's deadly. And so I thank Javier again. I thank Protect Our Care. I'm a big fan because I've seen them in action and I know what their mobilization can do. Abraham Lincoln said, public sentiment is everything. With it, you can accomplish almost anything. Without it, practically nothing. However, people have to know. In order to have a sentiment, they have to know. Thank you for Protect Our Care, for putting so many more people in the loop for their care, but also for their advocacy for many more people to have care. Thank you, Leslie. Thank you, Brad. Thank you. An honor to be with you, Javier. My best to your family. Thank you. Stay safe, everyone.
Great. Thank you, Madam Speaker. And with that, we will. I will thank again, Madam Speaker, the Attorney General, Leslie Dock, from our team. I know from Protect Our Care perspective, we could not feel safer in the defense of the Affordable Care Act with people like Speaker Pelosi and Attorney General Becerra in the lead. So I want to thank you all so much. And with that, we will end this call. I hope everybody has a great day.